Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by Ironman U, by EverySite.com, the coolest new technology around, RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Marathon coming up on Saturday, March 19th, our Challenge Athlete Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. Our next guest, very unique young man, three world championship appearances in three different sports. That doesn't happen very often. Cameron Wirth joins us after winning the Desert Triathlon this morning. Cameron, how are you?
Great, thanks, Bob. Yeah, back in the big smoke of LA now after a bit of time in the dust storm out in the desert. So, yeah, it's been a big day.
Good for you, man. Now, growing up, you grew up where?
I grew up on a small island. That's why I like living. It's actually a bit closer to me than native Australia. It's Lord Howe Island. It's 600 kilometres or 400 miles, if you like, off the coast of Sydney. The southern end of the Great Barrier Reef, and yeah, it's only long and half a mile wide. And the funny thing is, my good mate Tim Reed also grew up in the same spot. So now we've got a couple of triathletes, from the island competing all over the world. He was in, I think, the Philippines last night. So yeah, not such of a disadvantage to come from there, I guess, if you want to be an athlete.
So, but your sport early on was rowing.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, out there, I guess, the early settlers, they would have had to row out there. So I guess that was probably in my genes. If I wanted to get off the island, I had it in me to row. So that was the first sport. But as a kid going to school and getting around the island, you ride your bike everywhere. So I guess that's where I developed an affinity to ride push bikes. So I, switched sports to that. That was in there somewhere. But then I think just sort of probably being a bit of a jack of all trades, and up until this point I've been a master of none, probably drew me to triathlons. But I've got a bit of a special feeling about this sport. I really enjoy it, and growing up on the island, you're swimming and you're running everywhere, and obviously riding your bike to and from school. It's probably I've probably found the sport that's really right for me. I've certainly given a few a good crack and been able to compete at a high level. So hopefully I can do the same in this.
So Cameron, when you're rowing competitively, when did you start thinking that, you know what, we have a chance here to get to the Olympics?
Well, I was a pretty cocky and arrogant young kid, and I went along and watched the Sydney Olympics, and I remember standing on the side of the bank and watching them row by, and I thought, you know what, they put their pants on one leg at a time just like I do. I don't see any reason why I can't be there in 4 years. And I was 16 at the time, and yeah, I guess I just, yeah, it was that moment, really. From that day on, I never doubted the fact that I'd be in Athens and make the Olympic team. It might sound sort of simple, but it was simple in my mind, and it was just a case of finding out what I needed to do. And the great thing about rowing, you're in your own lane, so there's a time that you have to get from A to B. So it's all very quantifiable, and just ticked off the things I needed to do, and I was there.
So, well, and you and your doubles partner, you guys won the gold under 23 World Championships 2003. And
yeah.
So I'm sure when you went into the Olympics, you're probably thinking, all right, we beat a lot of these guys last year. What's the big deal? We're going to roll in and get our gold medal and go home.
Yeah, basically, we were pretty cocky and confident. And the thing in rowing is, I mean, it's a bit like Hawaii. You could win the Desert Triathlon. I think you got to win Hawaii, but there's a big difference. Even if you race the same guys, the rowing, the World Championships is one every year, but the Olympics is the mecca, and that's when everyone steps up. And of course, we'd won in 2003, and went into it pretty confident. Figured we'd just do what we'd done, we'll be fine. And everyone else rose to another level, and that rattled our cage. And we not only did we not perform at the same level, but we massively underperformed. And it was a tough learning experience, and I've had a lot of those at racing at the highest level, because I've done a lot of things in sports I guess, quickly. I've got to sort of the higher level very quickly, and unfortunately, I've made a lot of mistakes at the highest level because I haven't had a chance to make them at smaller, you know, I guess, lower grassroots level and come through the normal path. So, to me, doing a race like, you know, the Desert Triathlon today, which is obviously it's not a big world-class triathlon, but it's a great opportunity to, you know, make some mistakes and figure out where you're going well and figure out where you're not going so well and, you know, one step at a time, you know, on the road to hopefully winning Kona one day. So that's the big goal.
And you were dealing with some hand injuries, I think, or wrist injuries, and that led you, you're out of rowing for a little bit, and you jumped on the bike, and next thing you know, you're racing at a high level in 2007. I think your first tour, or your first multiple day stage race was Tour of Georgia.
Yeah, Tour of Georgia, the first time I'd raced more than one day on a push bike, and it was the second race I'd ever done. I did the Nationals, and they rushed me over here, and, you know, you're all of a sudden rolling up against the guys you've seen on TV, and Dave Zabriskie and George Hincappie, and I remember David Miller at the time, and just come back from his ban, and that whole old brigade. You know, I just missed the Lance version
right.
one career. He just retired, but... I got to race with him, obviously, when he came back. But, yeah, and I was at the World Championships that year as well. You know, and the year before, I'd obviously been at the World Championships in rowing. So, yeah, it was a pretty quick transition, I guess. But, again, it was a similar mindset that I had to wanting to go to the Olympics. You know, I got on the bike and, you know, found out sort of what you needed to do. And they said I had to win this race, and I'd be on the national team. And, I found a way to get it done. So, I got a bit lost after that though in the sport. Once you turn professional and start doing the really big races and living in Europe, it's a bit of another, you know, it's a bit of another planet really. And as I hadn't grown up doing the sport through the grassroots level, I missed a lot of things and made a lot of mistakes. But against guys that really make you pay for it. You know, when you're racing Chris Froome and Valverde and Cadel Evans and Richie Porte, you don't know what you're doing. They'll certainly show you that.
Any resentment from those guys? The fact that you didn't really pay your dues if I'm those guys going, wait a second, this guy just got into our sport, and all of a sudden he's racing with me, and I went through the juniors, I went through this, I went through that, and he's... racing Tour of Georgia. What's going on?
Absolutely. And I did sense there was always some animosity. And, I mean, I must admit, I don't have a huge, you know, never really stroke up a huge amount of friendships like I've got in rowing, you know, where I had been through the whole process, you know, from high school all the way through to, you know, obviously the Olympics and the World Championship level in cycling. I was sort of just thrown in there and people were like, yeah, where the hell did this guy come from? And, you know, it's pretty hard to shake that, you know, because... it's a sport where everyone's looking for, you know, an opportunity, the next opportunity, trying to move up. And anyone that gets in that way and they don't feel like you've earned it in the way they have, it was pretty lonely. It was a really lonely period of time for me. And as a person, it was turning me into a person I didn't really want to be. And that's sort of what drove me to ask Cannondale for a year. I guess they called it a sabbatical, as I was still under... you know, contract with them, and they gave me the year to do some other stuff for them on the PR side, and I kept myself active by doing a couple of triathlons, more just to be ready to go back onto the road this year, and it's, I guess someone was telling me it might be time to try something different, and Cannondale certainly encouraged me to do that as well.
What I love is the fact that when you're talking rowing, it's... you've got a lane line, it's you and your partner, and it's just you against the clock. I mean, yeah, there's other guys out there, but it's you against the clock. When you're talking about cycling, it's everybody, you're bumping, you've got all these different teams, everybody's got different agendas.
Yeah.
That had to be very confusing for you after dealing what you were, before you have to think about anybody else. Now you got to think about everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, you rowing, it's funny. I mean, if I've been able to take my mentality of rowing, I'm in your own lane, I've got to get from A to B in world record time and just get it done.
Right.
And just concentrate on that people around me, I would have been a lot better. Because all of a sudden, as you say, there's all these people around you, and all of a sudden the people are saying, hey, mate, on your right, and I'm looking over to my right, where did that noise come from? And letting someone past, and, oh, Worf, get out of the way. Yeah, okay, and I move out of the way. And next thing, I'm in the wrong position. And it's like, I didn't have that instinctual, no, get stuff, stay behind me. I'm getting from here to there, and I'm going to do it before all of you. There was just way too many things going on for a mind that probably is a bit more attuned to, you know, not so much doing my own thing, but a much more calculated effort. And even in Ironman, you know, it's not like, well, I mean, who knows? Maybe it will take a 7:59 to win Kona one day, but, you know, if you aim to do an 8:05 and you figure out how you can do that and break it into blocks of time, there's a good chance you're going to go very close to winning.
Right.
And if you're not, you'll be very close to it, and it'll come down to how well you can race that last part. So, yeah.
It's more like rowing again. It's basically,
It's just like one big, long rowing race, and I certainly use a lot of... I have a lot of memories during the race of rowing things, you know, relaxing with the breathing and things I never had time to think about recycling. You know,
because
you're always like,
so chaotic.
There's that car, or there's that camera motorbike, or there's that teammate, or there's a drink bottle coming away from a teammate, or the team car yelling in the radio, and it was always in Italian, being in Italian teams. It was, I wish I'd...
Crazy.
You just needed to be able to sort of think about a million different things at once, but hone in on just the one that mattered.
and the other thing is, you don't, as a triathlete or as a rower, you control your own destiny. When it comes to cycling, if you're a domestique, your job is to work for the other guy, and you don't necessarily control what you're going to do that day, right? It's really up to the team manager to tell you what you're going to do.
Yeah, and in time, you know, training as hard as you do and preparing the best you possibly can to then turn up to a race basically be, you know, okay, now you're doing this, and all that hard work has basically been, well, sometimes feels like waste.
Sure, days, yeah.
Because you've absolutely put yourself to the wall to shut down a big breakaway or whatever it was, and then, yeah, your teammates might not even do well. And that's fine at the time. It's racing. You deal with it, but... everyone's got a choice, and I decided, look, I didn't want to be part of that anymore. I mean, that wasn't me. I was participating in the sport way too much and not racing because I sort of stopped caring. I'd train hard, but, you know, I'd go to the races and just go through the motions, and I could do what I needed to do to, you know, race at a high level and keep a job, and that's not me. I wanted to strive to achieve, and I didn't realize I wasn't even searching for triathlon or whatever, but certainly doing those couple of events made me realize, well, wait a minute, you know, if I work as hard as I want to work in sport, I can do a sport where I'll be completely responsible for whatever happens here. And
yes.
And that's really exciting, knowing that on one day you can do something that can be so significant, and you're the one in control of all of that.
What was interesting, Caroline Steffen, who's one of the top female pros, she was a bike racer for a while.
Yeah.
And she said what she didn't like, she says, I did all the work, and then somebody else got the glory. If I'm going to work, I want to be the one standing on the top. Yeah, I want to be the one winning the race. Why should I let somebody else win the race?
Absolutely. And, I mean, and the best part, you know, being there with the people, and the people, it's just a different, completely different mentality. You've got the greatest, at Kona it really dawned on me, you got the greatest in the world for Dino running one way, and you know, an 80-year-old dude still on his push bike coming in off the bike.
Yep.
He's on the same course as the world's greatest athlete, you know, on the same day. And, I mean, you no wonder that the camaraderie in the entire sport, and you're there with your family, with your friends, with your partners, with whoever, everyone's got someone there supporting them, which is just makes it, you can actually share it with them. You can wake up with your special people in your life and go to the race, and they're there waiting for you at the finish, and that's something you never got in cycling.
No.
and it's just so refreshing and so much more, it's more me. Cycling works for a lot of guys,
yes.
But that lifestyle just never worked for me.
Well, and I always looked at cycling, the psychological part of it wasn't just put your head down and go, it was, okay, I got to be in this position, and there was so much people trying to psych each other out and all the rest of that. And I see it in triathlon. It's more about, hey, listen, either you've done the training or you haven't. There's no tactics you're going to use today that are going to beat me if you haven't put in the hard yards.
If you haven't worked, you never overperform.
No,
you just perform to the level of your training, or you'll underperform. It's really simple. And you know, I even had instances, and some of my good friends would say, "Look, don't listen." But your own teammates are like, "Oh, you're overtraining. You're pushing too hard. You're doing this and doing that." And then, of course, you back it off and you start going worse. And it's like, well, wait a minute, I know my body. I know what I need to do. In triathlon, I've got a completely different mentality. You know, I'll share stuff with my mate, Tim Reed, and he'll be like, holy shit, how the fuck, that is incredible. If you can still get off and run after doing that, that's going to be awesome. You know, can't wait to see how that works out for you. And then, you know, he'll go and try something similar, or I'll try his running set. And obviously, I can't do it. And you've got the same mutual respect going back the other way, like, dude, that's incredible. You know, you're actually encouraging each other.
Right.
And not saying, oh, shit, buddy, you know, be careful, you might get injured, blah, 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 where you're really sort of indirectly saying, oh, look, I don't want you to be too good, back it off. And you can pick and choose who you deal with.
Right.
You know, if you don't get along with someone, you just don't have to have anything to do with them. But in a cycling team, if you've got a group of these people around you, unfortunately, you have to, A, listen to it, and deal with it, and still try and get the best results out of yourself and for the team. And, as I said, it just wasn't the environment for me. And I'm really, really glad, and I feel like I'm, in a sport that I can be myself as not only an athlete, but as a human.
Yeah, you're still a young guy, which is awesome. So what was your first triathlon?
First triathlon was, I actually did Noosa. It's a funny story. I was in Noosa quite a few years ago. Well, it's competitive. The first triathlon, and there was a big hiatus, the first triathlon I did was on Lord Howe Island, and I actually raced him. And we swam from Rabbit Island. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see there's a little island out in the lagoon, and it's about 500 metres off the shore, and they dumped us out there and made us swim in. And I think we were about 8 or 9 years old. Maybe I was 9, Tim might have been 8. And we swam to the shore, and we got on our bikes, and he had his dad's mountain bike, which was way too big for him, and I had my pop's road bike, which was way too big for me, but with skinny tires, so I had the advantage there. So put a heap of time into him there, but then my chain jammed, and still had about a kilometre to go to get to the end of the bike ride on the jetty, and so I quickly ditched that bike and ducked into one of the closest resort and stole the bike off the rack with a basket. It was a Wimber step through single speed. It was pink and white. I remember it. And I got back on just as Tim was coming past. He had a big laugh on his face. And then, we finished the ride together, and I had to go through the painstaking process of watching this guy run like a duck. I just could not quite catch him, and he beat me. I ended up coming second to him. So that was the first memory of a triathlon I have. And then, I didn't do another one until 2013. I was at the Noosa Festival. I was there to do the criterium. I had my teammate Peter Sagan there, who's now the world champion, doing the trip with me. And we were doing the press conference before the race, and they said, oh, Peter, you know, Cameron's worked so hard for you during the year. You've won a lot of races. Is there a chance we're going to see you helping him today? He said, no, I win the bike race, but he will do the triathlon tomorrow and win that. And they said, shit, you're racing a triathlon? I said, well, I didn't know I was, but I guess so. He said, yes, he will do it, he will win.
So Peter Sagan basically said, challenged you to go do the triathlon.
Yeah, he thought, Cameron should do that as well. So Cannondale scrambled, they found me a bike, the guy somehow found me some clothes. Dad, I've deployed my dad to the sports store to buy me some goggles and get some elastic laces from my running shoes that I had, and I lined up in the premium mates wave, the sort of celebrity field the next day. So we picked a soft outing, and I did win, but it wasn't against much competition. A few of my buddies who were car drivers and football players, but still, a win's a win. So Peter was very proud that he'd proved his point. And
was he out there? Was he out there watching you do the triathlon?
He was out there watching, absolutely. I don't think he'd been to bed. It was pretty early in the morning, and I'd been with him actually up until not long before the start line, to be honest. So I can't say I took it too seriously, but it was great. And I certainly had probably planted something, because I only did two more seasons as a professional cyclist, and then, yeah. I was lining up in Kona myself. So
in that journey, so last you did Oceanside last summer or last fall, last spring, I mean?
Yeah, I did Oceanside. So that was sort of the first series, you know, the one that I picked out to keep me going at the first part of the year. You know, it was local, and I thought, I'll go and give that a go.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed that. And then everyone was like, oh, you should do an Ironman, you should do an Ironman. And I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. And I was at a sales meeting for Canada, and a guy by the name of Bonner Paddock, who had cerebral palsy, did a speech. And he'd done Kona a few years back, and he'd broken 27 bones in his feet in the process, or in his body.
Yeah.
And he still had two fractures yet to heal. And I was sitting there, I was thinking, wow, I'd just been in Aspen for a couple of weeks sort of training, kind of training. I'd just been up there holidaying, but I had done some work, so I was in okay shape. And I thought, wow, if he can do an Ironman with that, just a healthy person, I'm cheating if I've prepared for one. So I asked the guy, lady, Jamie Williams, who's in charge there, who looks after me. I said, Jamie, when's the next Ironman? She said, Whistler's in 2 weeks. I said, perfect, sign me up. She said, Cam, no, we want you to do really well. Can you train for one? I said, sign me up. I'm doing it. So that was that. They signed me up for Whistler. I did about four training sessions and went along to that. And I'd ridden 403 kilometres one day with Richie Port on his birthday. And I remember that day I didn't get tired or hungry. I just ate a lot all the day, and I actually got to the end, and I didn't even want dinner. I was so full. It was like we had like a buffet, stopping at all the bars and restaurants and whatever along the way, celebrating his birthday. And I just figured in the triathlon, if I just keep eating and fueling, and my body won't stop. And yeah, I ended up doing pretty well, and booked a ticket for Kona. So it was pretty good outing in the end. Yeah.
You said you were ninth. And then you were first age group.
It was pretty funny, yeah, because I passed all the guys on the bikes, all the pros. They started about 10 minutes ahead, and I lost some more time in the swim and caught them on the bike.
Wait. You rode by all the pro guys on the bike and started 10 minutes behind them?
Yeah.
That must have felt great.
It was a hard course. It was a really hilly course.
Yeah.
And it was one of the better bike performances that I've ever had for that time and that distance. And I averaged 325 watts was the average power. So, and I got off the bike and I could barely move. Like, I was completely lights out, like, just gone completely. I wasn't sort of hunger flat. I was just, I was finished. Like, I feel like I'd just ridden a road race. But as soon as I put my foot on the pavement, I felt like a new man. I was like, great, right now I just got to run a marathon.
And that was awesome. Your first marathon, I'm guessing.
First ever marathon.
So I'm up, I love you.
And the pros were great when they realized what was going on. There's this guy plodding along like a big fat pig.
Yeah.
It's slow. They thought it was hilarious. And so they're all encouraging me as they go past. Well, there was only eight of them that went past me, but all of them were great. And, it got me through that. And then all of a sudden we got pretty excited about Kona. And then as fate would have it, I was being very stupid on a mountain bike.
Yeah.
We mapped out a great preparation for Kona. Very stupid on a mountain bike. A week later, I stuck my foot down and snapped two bones in my foot. And had to have it reset, and that was that. I got the moon boot off 10 days before Kona, so there was no training, no elaborate training camps, and I ended up being in Kona just nearly as a participant. And
you were racing as an age grouper there, and you had did you have surgery on your foot?
No, under ultrasound, they were going to put. I didn't want plates in there. I mean, I wanted a sporting career and. I wanted to run. I felt at the time, I thought, triathlon could be my future, so I don't want any complications. And they felt that they literally ultrasounded it and broke it in front of me and fused the bones together. It was pretty cool. And, Dr. Hernandez, Virgil Hernandez down there in Tustin, he does some stuff with the Lakers, and he's a very good foot surgeon, so I trusted him. And he did a great job. He put it all back together, but it just meant that I didn't get a chance to train because, you know, I had to make sure it healed properly.
Oh, yeah.
And,
before that race, you did what, two rides of 4 hours?
Yeah, I did two. I rode on the weekend before, the Saturday, I rode to Oxnard and back. And and then when I got to Kona on the Wednesday, I rode the course. So that was that. So,
on the Wednesday before the race, you rode the whole course?
Yeah, Wednesday, yeah. I thought, I've got to figure out if I can actually make the distance still. So, in the 3 months since Whistler, or 10 weeks or whatever it was. They were the two bike rides I'd done.
Wow.
So, but it was great. I wanted to be there, and I wanted to know if, I mean, I've been to the Sydney Olympics, and
right.
I got that vibe. I went and watched the Tour de France in 2008, watched Cadel and Cadel Evans come past, and I got that spark, and that pushed me into cycling. And I wanted to be in Kona and, you know, and feel it and see if it gave me that, if it stuck the hairs up on the back of my neck and gave me goosebumps when I, you know, heard, you know, yeah, okay, it's the US anthem, but the build up to the event. And when I was out there, you know, when I got on the run, even though I knew I wouldn't be able to run because my foot was still fractured, that crowd, like, you know, you're important, you know, you're an
yes.
important part of this day. Like, how badly do you want to be a part of this day in the future, you know, at the front? And that's so the only way I could find that out was by being there. And so I had the opportunity to be there. I felt like I owed it a bit to Bonapatic to actually race it with a broken foot. So we've got something in common. And I'm glad I did it. So,
And you started 25 minutes after the pro women, and I think you caught all of them but Daniela Reif.
I didn't catch Reef,
yeah.
I think I could see her. I blew up like a cheap watch in the last 20K on that bike course. I really found out right there and then that A, I had a broken foot, and B, I hadn't done any training because I was going quite well to that point, and I could see her. I could see the helicopter, and I just couldn't quite catch her because I passed all the others. But, it was great to get out in the run and be just the pro men. Obviously, Daniela was out there, and then the other women were there, and they all sort of came past. And now, obviously, I know a lot of them, so they knew the situation. So, you know, all a bit of a, you know, support, and I could support them. And that was a really special sort of 30 minutes or so where it was just us on the course. And I really felt a part of that, that level, and felt that, yeah, I think, you know, one day I probably belong here with you guys. And, so I'm glad I got to feel that. And
When you come in at the end of the bike, I mean, the pros have their own little area. So You're the first bike in terms of the age group bikes, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of space there. I could pick any seat I wanted to get myself changed in. And when I was in the tent there getting sunscreened, I had three people working on me. I had someone putting on my necks and my face, someone doing my arms, someone doing my legs, you know, another person handing me food. I think every single volunteer, and I think because I was sort of where I was, I don't think they were used to having an age grouper in that early. And
no.
So they were all pretty excited.
Well, you were like 15 minutes ahead or so of the first other next age grouper.
Yeah, it was quite a long time. So,
so while you're running, I mean, I'm sure your first thought was, I can't run. I mean, I think you went to do the underpants run and your foot swole up after that. So you're probably thinking, I'll just stroll out of here. But you knew you couldn't stroll out of there if you're the first age grouper in.
No.
You had to run out.
Exactly. I had to honor the race. And I always knew that would happen. I assumed that would happen. I'd hoped that would happen. I'd hoped I'd be in that position. And I did my best to try and run, try and show that I was trying until the first age grouper passed me. And then it wasn't my responsibility to be that guy anymore. And it was hard. I mean, that was really painful. That, it was about 12 kilometres, 15 kilometres. I turned around at the top. I was on my way back. And he finally passed me. It was that guy that he was running with a camelback.
Yes.
I think he was a Belgian guy.
Right.
And I said to him, oh, thank God you're the first age group. He goes, are you the crazy guy with a broken foot? And I was like, yeah, mate, that's me. I was like, go and kick their ass. He said, oh, thank you. And he stopped and hugged me and said, man, you're good on you, and I want to see you at the finish. I said, you'll see me at the finish, buddy.
I'm sure that happens in cycling a lot, where someone passes you and stops and hugs you.
That was another moment, you know? I mean, that would, you know, cycling, they'd just kick you off the road. You know, if you were struggling, they'd be like, dude, get out of the way.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's cool. And then after that, I walked for a bit. It actually hurt more to walk. And then I sort of developed this shuffle where I just kept my feet as close to the ground as possible so there was no impact. And just figured, I just want to get to the finish before the sun goes down. And in the end, I got there a fair bit quicker than I thought. It was, I think it was only 10 and a half hours or so. And yeah, so it wasn't too bad.
So now you're coached by Pete Coulson?
Yeah, Pete Coulson's my coach. I obviously needed a coach coming into the sport because there's so much I don't know. And I originally, spoke to Craig Alexander and his group, and they were really interested in working with me, and I was really excited and honoured that they'd reached out and met with me in Noosa, actually. But there was something about Pete Colson. I'd met him in Oceanside briefly, and at that time he asked me about rowing and what I thought of it, and told me how he made his athletes do it. He thought it was the world's greatest thing, and I knew he'd work with and they work with Garmin, so I knew he had a great understanding of cycling. He was a champion cyclist himself. World champion. So I thought I was about to sort of do the thing with Crowley and his mob, and I thought, wait a minute, there's just something. I think this guy, he came into my mind. I said, this guy will get me. I just want to at least call him. I called him. He said, don't coach pros. I said, okay.
That's what I love about Pete. What I love about Pete is he's just a bit different.
Yeah.
Dogmatic and just, I don't do that.
I don't do that. I said, okay, well, here's what I'm thinking you should be doing, and let me know what you think anyway. So we had a great chat. We spoke for about an hour, and at the end he said, look, let's meet up. Let me think about it. And he went away for a couple of days, and we sat down and had lunch, and he said, yep, I'll tell you what, I'll come back. And he obviously coached Craig Alexander and Chris McCormick, top guys when they won Kona. And so he's got the right to not want to coach them anymore. Coach Heather Jackson more recently and all that success. And he said, okay, I'll give you a go. I'll do you. And I said, thank you. And it's been great. I mean, we get a message from him at usually 5:30 in the morning just to make sure I'm up and getting into whatever I've got to get into for the day, and about 1,500 others during the day. And, he really monitors me, and he lives only 30 minutes away, and I can see him any time. And there's nothing that guy doesn't know, and he knows. He seems to just know how to get the most out of me, and he's been a huge part of me really relishing and digging my teeth into this sport. He really motivates me every single day. And so, yeah, that's great.
Well, and you figure the other thing is if Tim Reed can be good at this sport, I mean, you should dominate.
I can't believe that. I still can't believe. I remember as a nine-year-old, I knew biomechanically he should not be able to run that quick. It just baffles me to this day how that guy has become one of the most feared men particularly in the 70.3 triathlon world. But he's great. So anyway, gives me a lot of hope. If I put in some work, hopefully I can at least be. Even if I could be half as good as him, it'd be good. No, I think the great thing is we both know that we've probably specialised in different fields. I think I'm definitely more of an Ironman, and obviously he's probably, his engine probably suits the 70.3s now, and that's a great friendship we're going to have. We don't threaten each other, and
What's the schedule for this year? Be after an Iron Desert Trail? Will you do?
Yeah, I'll do Oceanside, and then the plan is to do Cairns. I will do Cairns. Mm-hmm. That's a Pacific Championship now, so obviously if you can win that, which would be great, I've got my slot for Kona, but it becomes about points. So, there's a lot for me based on that, and potentially St. George in the middle. We just need to see how I recover. I mean, I raced today, and I feel fine. I probably didn't push it as hard as I could have, but still it's... we'll see after Oceanside, see how quickly I bounce back from that, and if I can fit in another race in between that and Cairns, we'll do it. Otherwise, if I'm going well enough, we might just bet on the fact that I can, pull it off there. So, and then after that, we've got time to have a look at it. I mean, there's obviously another trip to Whistler as an option, go to Europe, maybe do Switzerland, Zurich, another Ironman if I need the points, and then some halves in there as well, so... Yeah, for now the focus is Oceanside and on to Cairns and potentially St. George in the middle. So that's, don't want to look too far past that because it's a bit like, it feels a bit like the Olympic year, I didn't want to think past the trials, It was like, well, even university, I put everything on hold and we'll worry about it after the trials. I'll either go back to school or I'll be going to the Olympics. So I don't need to go to school for that year.
Right.
And it's a little bit like that with this. So, motivating. Just around the corner.
When you look back at your cycling career, was there one day that was your best day on a bike?
the day I think that sums up my cycling career, I mean, I had a couple of wins and I had some great results. I mean, but The one day was at the Giro in 2010. It was the longest stage of the tour. It was nearly 300 kilometres, and we went to the town of L'Aquila, suffered the devastating earthquake and landslide back in 2009. And it was freezing cold. It started at about sea level and finished at about 1,000 metres above sea level. So it was sort of just gradually going up all day. And a big breakaway of 50 riders went up the road, and I was in that. And a lot of favourites, and Basso, and it was back in the group, and Nibali as well. And now they said, just relax, stay there, and I stayed there. And sure enough, with 100K to go, we had 20 minutes lead, and they said, Cameron, we need you to come back and ride for the guys. And they'd already run out of teammates. And I was like, well, it's freezing cold. And I actually turned around and rode back towards them for about 7K, because at the end of the day, I had 305Ks on my clock. And then... Sorry, 315, because I'd ridden 15 extra Ks. And I rode back towards them. They were just a group of about 20. There's 50 up the road. It was Basso, Vinokourov, Nibali, Pizzata, all the big names, because obviously they never go on the breakaway. And I was like, Jesus, this is pretty cool. So I got on the front and chased as hard as I could and got the gap back down to 12 minutes. And then just, again, just blew myself to smithereens on this hill. And I got spat out from that group, and they had to go on. I had nothing left to give, and I almost didn't even make the finish. And they finished 12 minutes behind that group. And I mean, in the end, Basso ended up passing David Arroyo, who'd been in the breakaway on the second last day and winning the Giro. But, you know, I almost didn't even make the finish that day. You know, I'd been in a position where I was thinking I might win my first race. I was in a breakaway. I didn't have to work. It was like, wow, perfect. I just sit here. Tack everyone in those last hills, endurance, it's a long day, it suits me. But instead, I'm back there, and, you know, by the end of it, I was, my teeth were chattering, and I remember a Spanish rider, but I know Pablo Lastras actually pushed me the last 10K because I was just finished. And he'd been in that group that I went back to, and he'd been dropped when I'd been working, so he had a real, you know, obviously respect and had a great friendship with him for the rest of my career. That's the day that, you know, maybe I should have pulled the earpiece out. Maybe if I'd been a different person, I would have said, stuff you on.
I'm going for the lead. I'm going for my win.
I'm going to win this thing.
Yeah.
But I didn't. And it probably sort of also marked the course of my career because you came that guy that would do that.
Right.
So I was like, oh, Worth, can you help here? Can you help there? And felt special to be that guy in the group, but wasn't going to get me anywhere.
No.
I want to win.
Now, any of the cycling guys get a hold of you and go, Cameron, are you doing triathlon now?
Yeah. I mean, they do. It's funny. I mean, I've heard even some whispers of a few other guys thinking about giving it a go. So that's good. I mean, I heard that all with rowing. When I was rowing, all of a sudden every rower wanted to be a cyclist. And, you know, a few of them tried to change and whatnot. So no, it'd be great if they did. I mean, Jalabert came across and, you know, he really sort of struggled. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, fortunately, I got a bit of a swimming background. And
That's,
you know,
the hardest part. You have to have that. The technique in swimming is so hard to learn later in life.
Yeah, you can't learn that, and you need to swim. I mean, particularly in Kona, if you can't swim, you can't win the race in the swim, but you can lose it.
Yes.
And I'm in a position where I won't lose the race in the swim if I work hard enough at the other two.
So you swam, what, about 59 this year or something like that?
Yeah, I was under an hour.
But yeah, and that's without much swimming.
Oh, I hadn't swum for a few months, really. You know, I did a few swims in the week before because, yeah, it was my foot. They didn't want me in the pool because they didn't want it moving around and uncontrolled. So, you know, I've already improved a lot in the pool, which is great. And the running's the next one, of course, which I need to work on. And but that's been amazing. I live in Westwood. I rented a place on the Wilshire Corridor, so I'm an LA resident now, and I train at the track up at UCLA. And of course, you get the Nike group that are on the Olympic team all trained there. So you get Justin Gatlin, Tyson Gay, Alison Felix there. It's pretty amazing when you're doing your run sets and they're running around with you. It's, you know, no shortage of motivation. It's like, Jesus, this is like, you know, early days of cycling, riding along beside the likes of Cadel Evans and Ivan Basso and George Incappi and Christian Vandeveld, and all these guys were my idols, you know, watching the athletics over the years, and now seeing these people train, it's really motivating, and I think helping me, you know, make some good strides, pardon the pun, in my running.
That's cool that you're running up at UCLA. And one of our one of our kids from our Challenge Athletes Foundation, Blake Leeper. He's a double baloney.
Yeah, I see
amputee.
Blake. I see Blake there all the time. I talk to him. Yeah, I mean, he's an inspiration.
Isn't he a great kid?
Yeah. Oh, he just rips past you on those freaking blades of his.
He's training Willie Gault, the Willie Gault, former Chicago Bear, and I think gold medalist, is coaching him up there. And Blake's been telling me he's running with some 43 and 44 second quarter milers, and he feels like he can run with those guys.
Yeah, oh, he definitely is running. Yeah, no, he's quick. I mean, if I'm on the other side of the track and, you know, your peripheral vision, you're just looking at a few runners, you're like, whoa, and you don't even realize he's on the blade.
No.
You know, he just looks like, you know, a normal able-bodied athlete running around, and he's just as quick. So it's pretty exciting, the Paralympics for the US with the work he's doing up there. And, I mean, for him, I'm sure it's a bit like me. I mean, what a great environment to be in.
Oh,
you know,
he loves it.
Just sun's
love
out, everyone's having a ball, and, you know, you get to watch those guys train. But you realize that they're all hurting too, you know. It's fantastic seeing, you know, seeing Alison Felix or Gatlin just stop at the end of a set. They can't move.
Yes.
You're like, yeah, that's how hard you got to work. You know, there's the level right there.
What I was going to say is it seems like that you found the sport for you. I mean, obviously rowing, and you're great at everything you've done, but there seems to be a heart and soul to this sport that connects with you.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
And I want to win. I get into it and I want to go out there and I want to win. I want to, you know, be the best I can possibly be at this sport. And it makes me feel good as a person. I mean, I look in the mirror and I'm happy with what I see. Not being vain or anything, but as a cyclist, it's like, oh, God, am I skinny enough? Am I looking? I'm like, fuck, what are you saying to yourself? You know, you're a man. Like, stand up tall, you know, it just, now I feel like an athlete again, and I lost that. And, the people in the sport, you know, the sport itself, you know, my competitors, you know, everything. I just love it all. And that won't change. Won't change. I've been doing sport this long in my life. I'm not going to change.
No,
I'll always be doing something to do with sport, and I'll always be training long after my days stop as being a professional. I think you end up in places for a reason, and even breaking the foot and meeting Bonaparte can do all that. You know, it was just all part of it. And that, if anything was going to stop from doing sport, that would have been it. But, you know,
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Cameron, thanks so much for taking time. It's awesome to have you in our sport. I'm glad that you and triathlon finally connected. And there really is no reason that you can't be a big-time factor if you get the Kona, especially with the way you're improving with swimming and running, that you could be right up there. You could be a podium guy there.
Yeah, I believe I can. I mean, I as an athlete, I've always believed that I respect my competitors, and I never think I can. There's nothing that there's never things that I believe I can do that I can't really do. I'm very honest with myself, and I'm confident I can be it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. I mean, I don't need to do sport anymore to participate or to get a paycheck. You know, I'm doing this because I want to win, because I want to do something great. I want to do something special, and. I believe the work I'm putting in is worth it, and make it happen. So,
Love it.
Thanks.
Cameron Wirth has been our guest. Again, we're brought to you by Ironman U, EverySite.com, RonCatalina.com, our Challenge Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $70 million to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes or on BabbittVille.com. Make sure you subscribe to my new Endurance World newsletter. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.